I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas. And before we get to today's episode, The Stacks Book Club conversation around Emergency Contact by Mary H.K. Choi with our guest, Juliette Littman, I want to fill you in on some exciting changes that are happening at The Stacks. Before I say more, just know there will be no changes for you, the listener at home. You'll still get your episodes every Wednesday like you have for the last 3.5 years. Okay. That being said, today's episode is my final episode as part of the Lady Gang Network and Podcast One. I have really enjoyed my time with the Lady Gang, and I'm super grateful to Becca, Jack, and Kelty for helping the Stacks reach new audiences, helping me create merch, and teaching me a lot about the podcast world. I also want to take this moment to thank my incredible sound editor, Silvana Alcala. I have had the best time working with her, and she has made creating the show every week just a real joy. Silvana has made sure that every episode sounds good and, on a personal note, has taken the time to send me the sweetest notes about basically every single episode, her thoughts on the guests, and just great vibes. So I'm really, really, really going to miss Silvana. Okay, where is the show going? So I am betting on me and I'm taking the Stacks back all to myself. I'm going completely independent, which means I'm going to need you all, the listeners, more than ever. I will no longer have the support of a giant network behind me. And without getting too into the weeds of podcasting and financials and all of that, I will be responsible now for everything. That means hosting, websites, technical support, production, marketing. I'll be bringing on a new team member. All of it's going to fall on me, which is super terrifying. But I do know that in my heart of hearts, this is the right move for the Stacks to continue to grow and evolve into a show that I can still be proud of. So, how do you support? The first thing is the most obvious one. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Subscriptions are basically currency in the podcast world. It also means you'll never miss an episode. They'll come to you right in your feed every single week. The next thing you can do is leave a review on iTunes. It takes 30 seconds. You say like a nice sentence of how much you love the show. And if you don't have an iPhone, you can still do this by going onto your computer and going to the iTunes website and searching for the podcast. The next thing you can do is tell your people. I know you all know at least one other person who likes books. Please get them to subscribe to the show. Take their phone and click subscribe if you have to. But please, please, please reach out to your people. Make sure they're listening. This one is the big one. Join the Stacks on Patreon. I say this every week, but there is truly no podcast without the people who support the show on Patreon, aka the Stacks Pack. To join the Stacks Pack costs $5 a month. You all will earn perks too if you join on Patreon, like our virtual book club. You get discounts on the merch, you get shout outs on the show. It's probably the number one way you can support the show outside of subscribing and listening every single week. So please join us at patreon.com/thestacks. And there is a link to that in the show notes. Okay, here's another thing you can do. You can also shop the Stacks sponsors and affiliates. Clicking the links in the show notes and using the discount codes provided all help the show continue to work with brands who help me to pay the bills. You can buy yourself or a loved one some Stacks merch. That's very easy. TheStacksPodcast.com/shop. And last thing, you can follow the Stacks on social media at the Stacks Pod on Instagram and at the Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. If you like an episode, you can share it on social media, tag us. All of that stuff goes a really long way. I know that's a really long list, but I just want to thank you guys again so much for listening to the show, for supporting the show, for supporting me as an entrepreneur, which is a weird thing because I don't think of myself in that way. But this is a really exciting time for me and the show, and it's also terrifying. So thank you so much for being here and for listening this long. And we're going to get to the episode now. It's our book club conversation about Emergency Contact by Mary H.K. Choi. Our guest is Juliette Littman. She is the host of one of my favorite podcasts, Bachelor Party, as well as the podcast Jam Session, both on The Ringer. And Juliette is the head of production at The Ringer. And let me just say this very clearly for everyone, even the people in the back, there are a ton of spoilers on today's episode. So if you are going to read the book, don't listen now, listen later. Okay, last thing before we dive in, at the end of today's episode, we announce our September book club pick. You're going to want to listen. It's a really good one. Okay, I'm done. Let's talk Emergency Contact. All right, everybody, we're back with Juliette Littman to discuss for the Stacks Book Club, the Emergency Contact by Mary H.K. Choi. Juliette, welcome back.
Thank you.
We're going to do spoilers and stuff today. So if you haven't read the book, pause and come back when you're ready, or just don't be mad at me if we spoil something because I've warned you.
Pretty fast read. So I feel like you could pause and come back not too far away.
Yeah, it's a very fast read. It's a YA book, which we can talk about because I don't know that it really is. But we always start in the same place for these, is sort of generally, what did you think of the book?
I liked it. I don't think I knew it was a YA novel when I started reading it. I like remember everyone tweeting about this book when it came out. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. But then, yeah, I mean, I liked it, but it was just kind of a little underwhelming. But I think that's just because I had the wrong expectations. I feel like I didn't really know what I was getting into.
Oh, interesting. For me, I liked it too. I really like Mary's writing. Like, I find her to be super relatable. Sort of what you were talking about last time about, like, being in a conversation with an author that they don't even know that you're in. Like, I definitely felt like I could feel Mary in the book and that I was like, I like her. And I really loved Penny. I thought she was like a great main character because she was sort of like weird and also lovely. So there were definite parts of the book that I thought were slow or a little boring, but like when it would get back to Penny, I'd be like, yes, okay, here we are.
There's something very charming about it. Like, just regardless, it just was like a charming read.
Yeah, it was sweet. And I felt like it made me feel like I was younger again. I felt like a little bit like back in being in college. Like, I think you and I are around the same age. I was born in 86 and I think you're
same.
Okay. So I felt like sort of nostalgic a little bit for having like those kinds of crushes and like all of that
totally.
Sort of stuff. So I liked that. And Sam seemed kind of hot, which, you know, even though he also seemed really skinny, which was troubling to me.
I was like, this character couldn't be less appealing to me, like, in any way. But I understand that's like a type that sort of like has problems, has really like gross hair kind of guy.
I think that I don't know about you, but I always end up imagining, like, when I read books like this, that no matter what the author says about the guy or like the love interest character, I decide that the guy is the hottest person on the face of the earth. And I just, cause like, I need to like them. So like, if what you're describing is something that I'm not attracted to, I just am like, oh, well, actually he's just it's basically Michael B. Jordan. It's fine. Like, here we are.
Yeah. I think that, like, for some reason, I don't know, like, I don't read a lot of YA. So I think that, like, I kind of forgot some of the sort of simplicities that come with those types of books, I guess. But I just found like some of the holes a little too glaring. But when as I was reading it, I was like, this is very pleasant. I'm having a nice time.
What were the holes that were glaring for you?
Like, so little about school for Penny and her two friends. and very little like other people. Like when you're a freshman in college, I think one of the predominant feelings is like, oh my God, there's people everywhere. Yeah. And it's like exciting. Contributes to a lot of FOMO because you're like, why am I not doing what everyone else is doing? But Penny's world felt so small, and maybe it was supposed to because she kept it small, but it just felt like it wasn't populated. And also like Austin is such like a kind of lively city. I felt like that was missing in a way.
Interesting. I agree. I feel like college does feel like almost like overwhelming freshman year, especially like with so many people and like trying to figure out who your people are and like making connections and stuff like that. What did you think about the dueling perspectives, like having Sam and Penny sort of their POVs?
I liked it. I thought it worked well. I do often just feel like their view of their relationship though was like almost like too synced up. Like there almost like wasn't enough like confusion between like what he thought was happening versus what she thought was happening. And I don't think like a 23-year-old who thought he was about to be a father and considers himself homeless would be as like sympathetic and like attached to Penny as this character was. Like I felt like he was sort of what Penny wanted him to be and like what you would want this guy to be, but actually like that person has way more issues that would prevent him from being an available emergency contact.
Right, he definitely is like super unavailable even though he's somehow available for Penny. But I don't know. Don't you feel, I don't know if you've ever had like a text person in your life, like someone that you text a lot. I feel like somehow you make time for texting.
Oh yeah, of course. If you find it important, you find the time. But I just feel like it quickly translated into something else. Like that part was unrealistic to me. But of course, yeah. I mean, a text relationship is, I thought her acknowledgement at the end, like if you think it's a thing, if you wondering if it counts was really sweet, because I think so many people are like, is this a thing? Like, am I making it up in my head? And I thought that was very sweet.
Yeah. Yes, 1,000%. I have people in my life that I've become close with through the pandemic, basically only through texting.
Oh, for sure.
And I'm like,
I have a lot of friends that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, are we best friends? Because I feel like we're best friends and we've never met because of the pandemic. And in normal times, eventually we would have met in some way, but like, because I now do this show remotely, when I used to do it in person, a lot of people that I become close with through the show are people I've never met, like live in different states, in different parts of the country. So I definitely related to that. Like, I don't know. Have you ever like dated someone in that way, though? Like a strong text flirtation?
I don't consider that dating. Like, I'm just like, why aren't we spending time together?
Like dating, but like. Yeah. That like really flirty relationship via text that's like not physically present.
Sure. But like to me, I'm always like, what's wrong here? Like I wouldn't consider that dating. I would just be like, why aren't we hanging out? And then I would like blow it up and be like, what's going on here? So
you'd like call them and be like, is this a thing or is this not a thing?
Yeah. Or just like, why do you like, I would just be like, you don't get like the funny quips without like putting in some actual time.
Got it. Unless FaceTime, face to face.
If you're living in the same place, it's different if you're long distance.
Right. And it's different if, I guess, pandemic. I kept just thinking about how this book is so different than where we are now and like where young people are going to be for a while.
Yeah.
I guess, though, I guess young people also like don't seem to care, which
I was going to say, I having dated in the pandemic, you just kind of go for it. Like if you're interested, just sort of like take the risk or just like, I don't know, go out a few times or talk a little bit until you're like comfortable with your COVID situation. So again, like I think there has to be like an in-person component. Call me old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned. Oh, Juliet, you're such a millennial. My gosh. No, I agree. I mean, look, I have not dated since 2010. I've been with my partner since 2010. So I feel like I'm definitely old-fashioned in that way. But I think maybe that's what it is. It's like I liked that it was all on text because I was like, oh, this is so different and cutesy and like, I don't know. Plus, Mary's such a good writer and so funny that like their texting was so fun to read. Like
totally.
It was good texting. Texting's never that good.
It's also a language that like we all understand, right? Mm-hmm. And there's I think it's funny watching texting like make its way into novels and into books. Like, as a sort of, it's almost like ancillary or sort of like to the way people communicate in person. I don't know. It's a huge part of communication, and it is like a way people get to know each other. I guess my point is it just can't be like the only thing.
Right. No, I agree with you.
interesting watching it make it into like books and everything.
And I feel like so often it's done poorly in books and on TV. Like,
yeah,
I'm sometimes just like, that's not how texting works. And like on TV, I get so mad when it doesn't look like texting. I'm like, what are these text bubbles that you're showing us that look like a typewriter? Like, that's not what we all know what the bubbles look like. Just pay the graphic designer. Like, let's get the bubbles. I need to see the texting.
There, people are starting to figure it out, though, I think.
I think so, too. Do you watch Never Have I Ever or Never?
I have, yeah.
And they have cute texting on there.
That's a cute show.
It's
yeah,
so it's cute. I just finished season two. I think it's so cute.
I agree. Also, spoilers on this. It's a little dismaying to me to end season two like at the same place as season one. I'm just like, okay,
I had the exact same thought. Like,
what do we just do? Like, what do we just... I actually like really hate when TV shows do that, when they like undo like a whole season's worth of time or whatever. But I thought that show's really cute. However, it definitely... I think this book too, like, you know, we said we're the same age, I'm 35. I'm reaching the point where like stuff for teens and like young people, makes me feel old and like, I don't fully get it. And like, even talking about this texting thing, but I'm like, but wait, what do you mean? Don't you need to hang out in person? And so I'm like reaching the point where I'm like, oh, I'm old. Damn it.
Yeah, I definitely feel old. I felt old watching Never Have I Ever. Is that what it's called? Never Have I Ever? I'm like, I don't even know. I'm like, Davey, just own up to your shit, girl. Like, I kept being like, you need to be more mature. And then I was like, I'm the mom. Like, I'm not Davey. Like, I want to pretend like I'm Davey and I'm the mom. At the very least, I'm the aunt or the cousin. Like, but this just isn't me. And you're right. Like, ending every episode basically is the exact same on that show, which I think is like, you know, Davey does something bad, gets into trouble, has to get out of it. But still, so cute. And also,
yeah,
why is Paxton 75 and Davey's 12?
He's
30.
Oh my god, it's so... he's 30. Yeah, I looked it up too. It's
and
really
she's
uncomfortable.
19 still. She'll be 20 at the end of this year, and it really makes me uncomfortable. He has wrinkles.
Also, I have to assume she wasn't... I think she must have been like 17 for season one, which is like weird.
Yeah. 1,000%. I'm sure. I bet it's more uncomfortable. I bet he's the most uncomfortable about it. I bet he hates it.
Yeah.
It's super weird.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Super weird. Sorry. But I think that he's like who I had in my mind for Sam. Like, I think like that kind of guy. Like, super cute. I think he's super cute.
I think I was thinking of cartoon characters as I read this. I was like thinking of Daria, kind of.
For Penny?
Jane was more... I don't know. I just was thinking of like... I don't know. I think something about it just felt like fundamentally really untrue to me.
Interesting.
And maybe I'm being too harsh, but I don't know. And maybe I'm just being too old, but I just felt like the relationship almost like went too well and like took off really quickly. I just didn't buy into the relationship. And maybe this is my heart and soul coming out after, you know, a life of watching rom-coms and being like, that's not how it goes. But right. I don't know.
Like, you wanted them to be on different pages more and then come together and figure it out. Like, it was like too... yeah, it fell in too seamlessly, too early, sort of.
Like that really sweet email that he sends when they haven't spoken for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, that is a really great email. And that would just absolutely never happen with this totally flustered, bewildered young man. Like, he's the documentarian. He doesn't think with words. He thinks with pictures. So I just thought that was like very wishful thinking. But that is a YA novel. So why am I being so hard on it?
No, but I think... I mean, I never used to read YA at all before I started this podcast, and I have since started reading a very, very, very small amount, so I'm not an expert, and I know there are people who are listening who are, like, YA adults who read YA, like, in a very serious way, which is a whole other conversation that we can have. I have feelings about that, too. But I think that, like, good YA has to do all the things that good adult books do, you know, like, so like, if there are holes in the relationship or holes in the characters, like, I think that they deserve as much criticism as you would criticize a book for adults. Like, I don't think that you're being harsh at all if that's like how you felt about the characters, because it's still a book, you know, like, still the work went in. I think that like there's this other genre they call new adult, which is I think this falls into that category more, though. I think all the categories are sort of stupid because when I was a young person, I read books for adults and for young people, and like why it wasn't a thing when we were kids. So I feel like it's like almost over categorizing and like makes it like less, because like then when it's YA, it's like, you know, there's like the thing that I hated the most about this book, and I shouldn't say hate it, but the thing I didn't like about this book and I don't like about most YA is like this need to wrap everything up with like apologies and like admitting when I was wrong, and like that always really slows me down and bores me with the book. Like just get to it. Like, you like, sorry that we had a secret relationship, cousin, person, uncle, niece, whatever the fuck, I don't whatever she is, family member.
I couldn't really follow that either. I just, but also kind of like didn't really matter.
Yeah, it didn't matter. It was cute to be Uncle Sam. I get it. But like, like all of that stuff always really slows me down, because I just don't, I don't think life is ever that tidy. And I just don't know why we feel like we have to teach young people that it needs to be that way.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's not. And also like, that's kind of what I'm saying. There would have been so much more miscommunication and confusion between those two that it made it hard to believe that it kind of like got to their happy place so quickly.
Yeah. Did you feel like warm feelings towards them at all? Like, were you able to suspend your disbelief, or was it sort of just like, meh?
Yeah. No, I was, and I did like reading the texting because it felt so familiar. And like, it is, you know, I think some people, I don't feel like they could be the best selves over texting and like never want to meet in person. So I did feel like that part was like really relatable. I enjoyed reading this book. I think if you just like take a step back from it, a lot of it doesn't hold up, but it was like a really pleasant one day read.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. I think I liked it more than you because I really liked Penny a lot. Like I liked that kind of character. I find like talking about, we were talking about last time, like women writing women and like giving us space to be a lot of different things. And like, I felt like I could relate to Penny's like having her little kits and like all those things. Like that's such a me thing. Like my bag has all the little things. And like, I don't get to see that type of person a lot, I think. And like, I'm very different than Penny in a lot of ways, but just like the specificity that Mary wrote Penny felt so well done, especially in YA where there's so much focus on plot, and we got this like really well developed young woman.
Like interior life. Yeah.
And I just really like that. And like that she was messy and that she had like really relatable mom issues that weren't like predictable necessarily. Though I did know that there had been some sort of sexual assault. I figured that out very early. But even
how did you figure that out?
There was something that she said really early on that was like, because whatever happened. And I feel like whenever they use the phrase like something quote happened, I'm like, oh, there's some sort of sexual assault. It's like, I don't know why, but that language. So Penny was like really the heart and soul for me of the book. And I felt like because she was so well done, the book worked for longer than if she hadn't been like such a good character.
I also liked that in her own way, I felt she had a real confidence. And one thing that did really strike me as true is that Penny, and this is kind of revealed at the end to Jude, that Penny, I think, feels like such a mess and so insecure inside, but she projects confidence and like self-direction to the people around her. And I think that is that's sort of like a curse of the smart girl in a lot of ways. And I thought that was really well captured without having to like label it as being a certain type of person. And I really liked that a lot.
Yeah. I think Mary does that really well in her books. Like, she's talking about things that people feel and experience without like giving it that label of like, this is what you're reading about. Like, I don't think she does a lot of explaining, or like, I think she does a lot of showing, but not a lot of telling, I think is maybe the way you'd say it, which until the like wrap up ending, which I'm like, okay, we get it. But I do feel like she's sort of like, I don't know. Her characters are just great.
Something we talked about last time was like books to TV adaptations. And I feel like this would be a great Netflix movie, a great Netflix movie that I'd love to watch on a Saturday.
Yes, I agree. I feel like this, I think, and that would fill in some of the holes that you were talking about, like, because you'd be able to have more people around. You'd be able to, like, have interactions that would feel more true to, like, college experiences. And I think that sometimes when books have, like, big holes, they make for better adaptations, because then the mm-hmm. showrunners or whoever can, like, fill things in or make changes. I feel like when a book is really, really, like, extraordinarily great, the adaptations never hold up because there's too much good stuff and you're getting rid of things. Whereas if there's lots yeah. of holes, you can kind of, like, fill it in with what it needs. But I had that same thought of, like, I'd love to watch this.
Yeah, there would, like, be room to breathe for the whatever the adaptation is. And it sort of would be like To All the Boys, but, like, a little bit darker and a little bit edgier. But you could just see, like, there's the audience for it. And I think it would work really well. And I think also the texting would allow for, like, cool inner monologues and, like, voiceover from the various actors and whatnot. So also, I would love to, like, visually see Sam's world. Like, I feel like that was really interesting to me, actually. Like, I was curious about, like, the layout of where his room was, and sort of, like, when Penny was talking about how the ceiling really freaked her out, I was really interested in that too.
Yeah. And I would just like to see the food, the baked goods.
Yeah.
Like, totally. You love rom-coms. Do you know the one, what was it? With Diane Keaton and Mandy Moore.
Oh yeah. Or Mandy Moore, like,
is a baker. Shoot, not Don't Tell Mom. It's like I Love You More or something like that. Or, like,
yeah.
Mom Knows Best or I don't know. Something about.
That's a deep cut. That one didn't get a lot of attention.
But when it first came out, like, on TV, like, when it came to TV, I feel like it was on a lot because I've seen it a few times. And she wears, like, wears a lot of, like, polka dot outfits, belted. She's really leaning into her, like, puffy skirt kind of vibe. And I really like that movie.
I believe that was called Because I Said So.
Yes, Because I Said So. That's correct. Nailed it. Bingo.
I looked it up.
Amazing. Well, that book or that movie has sort of, like, what I imagine that coffee shop vibes could be, like, with, like, the magic of the baking. And then she ruins the souffle, an iconic film moment.
Yeah, totally. Souffle is hard to nail.
Yeah, especially when you're caught up on two different men. Poor Mandy Moore. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What did you think of the ending? Like how it kind
with
of
the all, moms?
No, with like Sam and Penny and them like reconciling to wanting to be lovers.
I thought it would have been better if she ended up with the guy from her class and they just were each other's emergency contacts and like best friends. I actually thought that was where I was headed for a second. And I thought that would have made a lot more sense. I think that maybe one thing like Penny wasn't ready for was just sort of like the reckoning of like you're the imagined person that you're texting with the actual person. And I thought there were some really good insights about how like these people only exist in each other's phones to each other for a while. And then I do think there is a reckoning of like, are you the person that you seem to be over text? And because don't you have that with people in your life where you're like, you're so used to their tone over email, text, GChat versus like who they are in real life. And it's like almost confusing. Like, I don't know if you ever have this, but like when you're like in the room with someone and you read a text that you got from them, you're just like, wait, is this the same person? Like there's a real disconnect between the human and the text persona. And I felt like that didn't kind of come into play. And I would have liked that to be explored a little bit more.
Yeah. You're saying that if she had ended up with the guy from her class instead of Sam, you're having said that is making me think that actually is like probably the more realistic, interesting ending. It's not, I mean, makes it not really be a romance, but you know, all that aside, sure. But like, I agree because I like when men and women are friends in books.
Sure.
And in life, like, I feel like it's always romance. So I do sort of, that ending sort of intrigues me. I was sad that where the book ended because I really wanted to know what happened. I wasn't sure if Penny and Sam were going to work out. And so I was really curious if they would. And so the way that it ended sort of left me being like, is there going to be another one? Like, I want to know, do they stay a thing? Because I could see this not working.
Yeah, totally. Don't you think she would grow out of it? Like, she would grow out of the fantasy before he would? Seems like he falls for women.
I think so.
What did you think of the Lorraine character?
I liked her more than I think I was supposed to. I mean, she seemed horrible a little bit.
I felt bad for her, kind of.
I did too. I felt bad for her. And I felt like he was not very generous with her feelings about the whole pregnancy. Like, I think he was so obsessed with his feelings, which he is allowed to have and be stressed out and nervous about, like having a kid. And I get all of that, but also like, he did not give her the grace to have those feelings too. Right. And I feel like if you're the woman and you find out you're pregnant and it's not on purpose and your partner is allegedly homeless and poor and like has nothing going for him and is like falling apart at the seams, I think that you would be allowed to also be really fucking stressed out about it.
Yeah.
And so I felt like that made me feel really bad for her. I mean, look, she should have told him that it wasn't gonna be a functioning pregnancy or whatever, but I didn't hate her, and I know we were supposed to.
I didn't hate her either. I was like, this is also like a confused person as well. Like, it sort of felt like there was more sympathy for her possible than she was receiving. But I thought that it was kind of an interesting twist to have her in the book at all. Like, I feel like she could have been totally absent, but to actually make her like a present part of the book was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And I thought that their date scene where like, they're like, we're not going to talk about us. Then they talk about like then they end up talking about it. That seemed like really realistic to me.
Yeah.
And also like I like Lauren because she was able to say the things that like we all want to say that we end up not saying or like getting too scared to say. But she was like, look, you suck and you didn't get to know my family. And like you can think I'm X, Y, and Z, but getting to hear from her and her like kind of saying why Sam sucks a little bit was, I like that. Like it added like a nice layer to him.
Totally. No, I definitely agree with that for sure.
And again, another really well-written female character.
Yeah. I think ultimately my problem with the book is that Sam is so unrealistic. Like Sam is just,
Sam was not for what, you.
Sam is like what women would like Sam to be. Sam is not who Sam would be. And I think that like sort of bothered me.
Right. Cause like that kind of guy is not writing those emails. He's not emotionally available.
Yeah.
Also, I have said this for years and years, but like nobody wants to date a 23-year-old or 21-year-old guy less than I ever do. Like, I don't think I've ever dated a 21-year-old in my entire life. Like, it's not a feasible age to be dating someone. Like,
no.
It's
no. I hope you're not in love with a 21-year-old. It's not going to go well.
Yeah. Like, leave them. Go take your time. Go do you. Go travel abroad or whatever young people do. And then come back when they're 30. Like, there's nothing good happening. Yeah. If you're lucky. If they're worth it, they'll probably have figured something out. But yeah, you're right. Like, a 21-year-old guy with all these issues is super not available. And like,
he's using you as an emergency contact and giving you absolutely nothing back. And he is not available to just drive you to the hospital. I'm sorry. He's not.
Right. But I don't know. On the flip side, maybe he is because he's blowing off some other part of his life that he should be doing, you know, like in a super irresponsible 21-year-old guy kind of way.
Sure. It's giving him a lot of credit.
I think he liked her and like wanted to be there. I don't know. I agree with you that Sam, the Sam that we get is probably not anything like the Sam that we would get in the real world.
No.
But I just want Penny to be happy, so I think I was willing to suspend my disbelief on Sam.
I want Penny to be realistic. So
you want Penny to get a 401k ASAP and get her shit together.
I just want her to know what she's getting into.
It's true. I mean, I don't know that Sam and Penny got married ever. No. Like, I don't know. No. I do think that Penny could discover that Sam is not right for her and go back. What was the name? Andy or something?
Yes.
The writer guy.
Yeah.
Though, okay, here's my biggest pet peeve from the book. And I hate this in all books that do this. I really dislike when we get writing advice from characters in books. It's like too meta for me. And I don't like being explained to. I just think your work should do it. So if you're having to explain to us what good writing is, I don't like that.
Yeah, like when there's the breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
But and her professor's like, finally, this is what I've been waiting for. Yeah, it's like, okay, we get it. It's a little meta. I think that's actually a real plus for historical fiction. And you know what I didn't mention last time you had me on? I wish I did. I fucking love Yale Doctorow. And he is
unimpeachable.
Ragtime is awesome. Ragtime is an awesome, awesome, awesome book. I really recommend it. So is The March and Billy Bathgate. Okay, anyway. But one of the reasons why historical fiction is great from like just like the writer standpoint is it very often blocks them from like writing themselves into it, right? They've had to like research something and they can't, and there's like not a way to like introduce a plot about writing. And it's sort of like why movies about making movies often do well at the Oscars. It's like people just like love to celebrate and like venerate their own profession. And it does, it's sort of like we see what's happening here. You're writing yourself in here.
Right. And I hate that in all. I hate like, I don't like plays about theater making. I don't like movies about filmmaking, and I don't like books about writing. And I just I think if you can do it well, you don't have to explain it to me. You know, like
totally.
I just don't need it. It just irritates me. And I didn't quite understand what was going on with that part of like with her story, and so that was annoying me too. I was just like, I don't know. I don't get it. But that story was really fucked up about the parents who kid died because they were taking care of like a Tamagotchi. That was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. I have to say, I also find like books within books pretty boring. Yeah. I'm just like, I agree. I don't need this.
Yeah.
I was sort of like skimming those sections because I was just like, I understand this is going to be like a metaphor for what's happening in other parts of the book, but like, I don't really care.
But what was the metaphor? I like, that's what I was like, I don't understand why we even have to do this.
distracted parents, maybe.
Oh, I thought, I was thinking more like Penny was obsessed with, because like there's this moment where they say like Sam only exists to her in the phone, like that she goes to him in the phone. So like maybe that was it, like that he was controlling her life and vice versa from inside this thing. Mm. And that like she didn't know about like the rest of his life. I don't know. It just was like, I just didn't think it needed it. I didn't think that that added anything to the story. And if you're gonna do that, I think that it should add things.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we can't decide on like what, maybe it was supposed to be a combination of sort of like how technological life is not a replacement for real life. I don't know.
I'm sure it's like all of those things, but I also just find that conversation really boring because I think that technology life is real life at this point.
Yeah.
Like our whole lives are technology. And like, if you can't find reality in that, like that says something worse about you than people who understand that like that's where we are, like
right
you know, people were worried that TVs would make us all brain dead and like here we are still watching TV. I mean, maybe we are all brain dead and like I'm an idiot, but either way it's still very much like our lives and that the culture still revolves around these things. And so for me, I just didn't care. I didn't care for that story. I didn't need it. I didn't think the book needed it. I think she had said it already in the book, the original book, not the book within the book. You said you had really close female college friendships. What did you think of Jude and the other gal? I don't remember her name.
You know, her name is Mallory.
Thank you.
I think you get to college and you cling on to the people who are close to you because you're just like looking. And I think a lot of people have stories about like their freshman friends are not the same as their end of college friends. And so the way that those three kind of like clung to each other really rang true. Cause I do think like you just get there and you're just like thrown in and it's like, you're on your own for the first time. I feel like I can barely remember how I was feeling as a college freshman. Cause it was like so overwhelming. I'm like not in touch with whatever those feelings were. So I actually thought that was like very realistic where like you do just become friends with your college roommate cause they're there.
Yeah.
And then you either like each other and remain friends or you find your people. Ultimately college is, I think, about finding yourself in your first phase of adulthood. I think most people would recognize that your college self is not your final self, but you find your people. And I think but I thought that sort of like beginning of first semester of college, like that really rang true to me. And also like, it would be cool to know like the baked goods guy at the cafe, like you didn't know anyone in town. So I thought that part was really well done.
Yeah. And I liked Jude. She was annoying to me. Like I would hate being roommates with Jude. I just know that I would. But I liked, again, I thought she was like a good character. Like I feel like Mary did a really good job of like creating full characters.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think like, and having read her other two books, I think that that's like really her strength. Like she gives her characters so much with not a lot. Like she doesn't spend a bunch of time describing them, but like their dialogue and the way that she like creates who they are, I think is really, really cool and well done. And so like someone like Jude that I really was like, I know I would not like this person. I ended up like sort of liking that person. Mallory also not a fan, but even she had like redeeming, you know, like she seemed like she'd be a good hang. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. She had the cool party for them to go to with the good dresses and everything. Yeah. She did seem like a good hang.
Like the rich girl with all the shoes and the friends and the hot boys. Like I'm down.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I also thought that the sort of like the range of like sexual activity was pretty realistic too, from Penny to Jude's the one with the boyfriend from Australia.
No,
right?
That's Mallory.
Oh, that's Mallory. Yeah. Gotcha. I thought that was realistic too. And just sort of like not knowing like where you should fall on that spectrum. I related to as well. Basically like all the anxieties I feel like of the book felt very true to life.
Yeah.
And maybe not all the plot points, but like all the anxieties for sure.
Yeah. 1,000%. And like the sweating, like the Penny, I'm a big sweater myself. So I was like, yes. And I think like when I think about this book being for younger people and like, I think about Mary writing it, knowing that it's for younger people, I think that's something else that she does really well is like make space for young people to find themselves in in the experiences of her characters, like that there is this range so that like if you are having a lot of sex, like that's okay. And if you're not, yeah. that's okay, without saying, if you're not having a lot of sex, it's okay. Like you'll find yeah. someone. Like she's like cool. Mary is cool. And you can tell that she like has respect for young people. And so she's not like, I didn't find this book to be patronizing. And I thought if I was young, I wouldn't have felt like being lectured to, except for like the tying up of the ending, as I've mentioned 900 times. But aside from that, like, I was like, yeah, this like, this book feels like cool and edgy for young people.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think though I have maligned Sam a lot, I thought him saying I'm basically homeless was really meaningful, because it actually wasn't about if he's technically homeless or not, but about how he's feeling and mm-hmm. how he feels about like his life. And I thought that was really meaningful as like a just sort of like admitting vulnerability and sort of like how you like self-perception. I thought that was like a really poignant moment, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm just like thinking through what you just said. Yeah.
Because you just like, I think at that age, there's just so much, there's such a huge gulf between how people perceive you and how you feel.
Yes.
And so for him to speak like, and for him to like not say I am homeless, but specifically like I'm basically homeless, is like really speaking to his own insecurity and self-perception, and not about whether he is or not. And I thought that was a really, that was like one of the most vulnerable moments where he was like willing to show her like how he lives because he has so much anxiety and self-consciousness over it. So I thought that was really sweet. I do think there's a ton of sweetness in this book. My heart and heart is just saying that's not necessarily realistic, and that's right. my problem.
No, I mean, I think that criticism is 1,000% valid. You've definitely like swayed me slightly to your cold, dark heart. But but I agree. I do think like also for young women reading this book who are interested in dating males, men, people who identify that way, I think it is really nice to be like, look, get you a person who is emotionally available, right? Even if we don't think that Sam would
something
be.
Something to aspire to.
Yeah, yeah. Even if we don't think Sam would be IRL, like in this book, he is. And so I feel like that's like pretty good. That's like a good thing. Like you want someone who's like gonna listen to you and be like, after you tell them about this harrowing sexual assault rape, to be like, you didn't do anything wrong, like to have someone that's there for you, like that is, I mean, that's the point of the emergency contact, right? Like someone is there for you when you need them.
I like the emergency contact concept a lot, by the way. Like that just was like a really great framing.
Yes, I love that. Okay, that's what we are going to talk about, which is, we always do this, the title and the cover of the book. What, you like the concept? Did you like it as the title?
You did. I thought it was really cute. I thought that was really cute. I will say, I've had this book in my office for years.
Like, oh, you
I
have? Sent
to me when it came out and I never read it. And the book it was versus the cover is like not a match for me. Cause I was like, when you suggest reading this book, I was like, oh yeah, I've had that for years. Literally. I remember when it was sent to me, and I was shocked at the contents and the tone based on the very sort of like more wistful cover, I thought. So
what were you expecting?
I had no idea. Oh, okay. I don't know. I think something just a little bit more serious maybe, or something a little bit more like opining, and something I think the character of Penny caught me off guard. I really wasn't expecting her to be so, I don't know, not so anything, but just like, she was just a much fuller and kind of much more sardonic and acerbic character than I was expecting based on the cover.
I mentioned, this was the last of Mary's books for me to read. So I'd read her second book, then her third book, and then this one, her first one. And the art on the covers I had like come to see. And so after having read the other two, I sort of knew the tone. But now I'm looking at it again being like, would I have known that if I hadn't read it? I just love the art. I just love the artwork.
It's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. Like the cover's so beautiful. All her covers are stunning. I don't know if it's the same artist or not, but they're gorgeous. And I love the title. I loved it when it came up, like when we figured out what was happening. I always like the moment when you find out the title in the book, when you're like, oh, and I'm like, does that work or does that not work? So I like that a lot. And I think when I look at the cover after having read the book, like them on their phones, like I didn't really notice that when I looked at the cover. I thought it was people who like
weren't. Me neither. I didn't notice it at all.
Yeah. I thought it was like a couple who was like having fights. And that's like why their backs are to each other. But now when I look at it, I'm like, oh, it's sort of telling us like what happens in the book, which I appreciate. I'm not really a huge cover person. Like, I do judge books by their cover, but I don't really spend a lot of time looking at covers until after I read the book. And then I'm like, oh, all the little Easter eggs.
I like to read the acknowledgments first. That's usually the first thing I do.
You read acknowledgments first. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I like to know who are the people that helped bring the book into the world. And I feel like, I remember when I read, Daisy Jones and the Six and I read the, acknowledgments for that. I was like, oh, this is an incredibly warm and like caring person who wrote this book. And that, and for some reason, like knowing that information helped me read or guided me through the book in a specific way. And like, in general, I like to know how the writer feels about the people that help support them. And I don't know. So I always read bios and acknowledgments first.
I always save the acknowledgments for the end because that's like my favorite part of every book, which is really terrible.
Me too.
I love acknowledgments, but I don't do them.
I do too.
I sometimes don't do it before because then I feel like it would sway my opinion of the book. Like I'd like it more.
I don't
or
know. I guess I just like to know how that is affecting my, like, I don't know. I don't know. It just opens up a window into the writer that I find really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Sometimes when I read someone's acknowledgments, I'm like, oh, someone I'd like to be friends with. Like you have all your acknowledgments are like my other favorite authors or like, I always think that's fun to see which like writers they worked with in workshopping
totally.
And stuff. I think the last thing we have to talk about, which I kind of spaced on, but I think is important with this book is that also Penny is an Asian woman. And I think like that is really cool and exciting too, because as a woman of color, like we don't always get to be the love interests in stories. And so I think like that's also something cool that Mary does is like she writes about people of color without being like, as a Korean woman, like I do X, Y, and Z. Like it's just, we exist in the world. And so of course we exist in the books. And I just really appreciate that about Mary. And I want to make sure that I acknowledge that part of this book.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought this stuff about her name and how you'd write it in Korean was really cool at the very beginning and then just kind of like moved on. And I liked that because I do think names are such a huge part of identity and I'm not sure everyone agrees. But it was sort of like part of introducing you to the character because of course it's part of who she is and then sort of moved on. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. It's the same. I mean, it's the same thing we've been talking about the characters throughout. It's like she tells us stuff about them or like shows us little bits of them, but she's not like explaining everything. You know, she's not like in Korean culture, da, 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 da. She just like throws out these little tidbits and it's like, right. That's how it really is. Like, when I'm not talking about being black on my podcast, like I don't really talk about like black cultural touchstones, you know, like I'm not like, I like this thing because black people did this in the 1850s. And, you know, like, so I like that it just was natural and like she didn't, it's like, it didn't feel like she was writing it for white audiences, which I think happens so much or for like, because it's for young people, there needed to be all this explanation because what if they'd never met a Korean person, you know, like I like that. And then when I went on Goodreads, I saw people asking if Sam was white. And I don't know. I imagined him like Paxton Hall Yoshida, but that's because he's the hottest guy in the world right now to me. But I think he is white. I think he was like Hungarian and Polish or German and Polish or something.
I think he's a German and Polish. Yeah. I think he was white. I think also there was that really funny bit about how Becker, his last name means baker in German.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, his race sort of was like inconsequential.
Yeah, it didn't really matter. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the book before we get out of here?
I just feel like I was unfairly harsh. I did like it. I was being really hard on it, but I had a really nice time reading it. This is just my heart and heart being worried for young people as they get into their dating lives.
I don't think you were that harsh. I feel like it was totally fine. All we do on the show is talk about books, and so sometimes it gets really brutal. I weirdly like the book, which is so rare for me to like think fiction is cute.
Oh great,
but you're right, they're definitely holes. So you're just being an honest and good guest on the podcast, and we appreciate you so much, Juliet. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yay.
Hope I was as good as Quentin Tarantino.
You were better. Thank you. And everyone else, we will see you in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to Juliet for being my guest. I am so excited to announce our September book club pick. It is Blood in the Water, The Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and Its Legacy by Heather Ann Thompson. As some of you might know, this is the book that inspired the podcast. So it's a historic moment to finally get to discuss it on the show. That episode will air September 29th, and you can tune in next week to find out who our guest will be for that conversation. If you love the show, head to patreon.com/thestacks to join the Stacks Pack. Please make sure you're subscribed to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a rating and a review. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, and check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. Thank you one last time to Silvana Alcala for being such a stellar sound editor. I am going to miss you so much. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tigirigis. The Stacks is created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.